My name is Mairead Whelan and I'm puppy walking supervisor with Irish Guide Dogs for the Blind. With Irish Guide Dogs, we would place and train roughly about 35 to 40 guide dogs a year. And this year, hopefully, we'll have 42 assistance dogs trained. Our centre is based down in Cork. We have brood bitches and stud dogs who live as normal family pet dogs in a normal family pet life. They have their pups. They come into our centre in Cork, into our puppy creche, for a couple of days to be microchipped, worming, that type of thing. We do a small assessment on them. And then roughly at about 7 weeks of age, we place them with normal families. Now, family can be people with kids, retired couples, single people, that type of thing. And what we do with the pups from a very small age is socialise them, getting used to heavy noises, fireworks, so there's no fear factor there, because we're looking for a confident dog. So if anything happens, they won't panic or take off with someone attached to them. When they're roughly about 14 months of age, we send them off down to Cork to our training centre, and they start off doing an early training with our guide dog trainers. We make a decision then on whether they're best suited to guide dog work or assistance dog work. And then they'll go either to a guide dog instructor or an assistance dog instructor. And then we, which is nearly the hardest part of it all, would be placing the dog. The matching, that's the hard process for us. Is the dog a fast walker? Is its new owner a slow walker? Does the dog like children? Is it used to children? All of those little things that we take into consideration. So roughly the dog goes out as a working dog between 18 months and 2 years. And then we follow up on that dog every year as well, just to make sure things are going according to plan. But it's all positive training we do with them. We would start in at the puppy walking stage. It really is. We'd have the basic, very basic training, the sit, wait, downstairs, all of that little type of thing. But what we're really getting through is that happy, confident dog, that willingness to work. You can overdo it with a small dog, and you'll get totally switched off and won't want to work. And it's that willingness is so important to us. So when they go to Cork, that's when they'll kick in, stopping at curbs, stopping at the top of a flight of stairs, being aware of traffic, being aware of overhead branches, all of that type of thing. And sometimes you will have a dog that will have that natural guiding movement as well, that will move away every obstacle. But nearly every guide dog owner that will end up with a dog will all tell you how fast they can move when they get a dog, instead of using their cane, you know, feeling for obstacles along the footpath. They're not even aware of those obstacles.
Plus they have a companion.
Even some of our guide dog owners that mightn't have to go out to work every day, but they have to get out then with the dog every day for a walk, pees and poos, all of the natural normal things as well. So, you know, it's great for them as well. And then for our assistance dog program, which we started about four to 5 years ago in Ireland, and we were the first in Europe to do it, is for autistic kids. And the companionship and the relationship that's building up between the dog and the child is huge. It's and again, the parents, the feedback we get from them is so great, you know, that, you know, they can sleep at night, the dog is upstairs with the kid, they're not, you know, they'll do it for the dog, they mightn't do it for the parent, eating their dinner or going into a shop or anything like that, they'll do it for the dog, they mightn't do it for you or me, but they'll do it for the dog. So that whole relationship is great there as well.
When you have every now and then, I mean, we know that, you know, they're all beings, so it must have happened that a dog that went through the training ended up not being fit enough for the job. What happens to those guys?
What we have then is we have a companion dog program as well. Some dogs don't want to work. It's like people as well. Some people don't want to work.
Well, if I can choose.
Or maybe for health reasons, you know, that they might have a leg or hip problem or some stomach, even a stomach problem, that we need a dog that's going to be fit and healthy 7 days a week. But we also have a companion dog program as well. Now, it's not a program we support. A dog would just go out as a normal pet dog to the family. And again, it might be a child with just a slight, small disability, could be Asperger's or you know, or even just wheelchair, that type of thing. Yeah. Now, we don't train the dog for them, but it's more of a companion. Okay. So our first preference always is to use our dogs in some way if we can, because all our funding, well, I shouldn't say all, about 90% of our funding comes from the general public with voluntary collections and all that type of thing.
Hard enough these days.
It's very, very, very tough. We got the government actually slashed our funding this year. They used to give us 15. We're now down to 10, and
yeah.
the cut.
Yeah, that's something that you hear everywhere. Like, you know, yeah.
it's horrendous when you know.
Feel like, you know, we're a bit disconnected when it comes to our animals. Still, like, you know, if you would see them for what they actually do to society, it wouldn't happen.
When you see the levels of stress come down in a household where people are climbing up the walls, a dog goes into it, and the stress levels,
yeah,
you can't really pay for that, and you'd love to throw some of the ministers and whoever into houses as well, maybe. And just see that the effect that the dog has, even not even directly on the person involved, whether it's a guide dog owner or an autistic child, it's on the whole family.
Yeah.
But a working guide dog, you know, they do so much. You know, for a person, it's the companionship, it's that whole work thing as well, just getting out, not worried about going from A to B and walking into poles or dustbins or any of that sort of thing, you know. So it is frustrating sometimes, as you just say.
Well, it's just the sort of business sort of thing. I mean, I'm a psychologist.
Yeah.
It's difficult enough to get into schools these days, and you know, oh, we don't have any money, and you know, how long does it take, how many classes do you need, when in fact it does so much for the kids.
Yeah,
you
and,
know,
and they would probably talk about it all day, you know, for the rest of term, like that.
We had this German fella in once. He was deadly, he was, you know. Usually say, like, oh, go back to fucking Germany. You know, so the dog changes all that.
Kids love it as well.
Yeah.
And it's even like doing simple things like that, school talks, and making people aware of people with other disabilities, whether it is blindness or visual impairment or autistic kids as well, and making kids aware that, you know, there is unluckier ones out there as well. So
one question that I have, you know, when you talk about sort of autistic people, let's talk about the others as well. They obviously outlive the dog by quite a few years.
Yes.
And we all have lost dogs. Mm-hmm. And it's not something you get over, it's something you live with and you learn to cope with. So let's just say, you know, they become quite dependent on them. Is there any psychological support that you have for the owner? How does that usually work?
What we do, we haven't hit on the assistance dog program yet because it's only been around for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But with our guide dog owners, because we know the dogs, we know when a dog would be due to retire, which can be any age really, 8, 9, 10 would be the norm.
Yeah.
So we would know a good year beforehand that dog would be due to return. The fact we're out as well, we know what the dog is still, if it's still capable of working.
Yeah.
So we'd be planning all along with the owner. The dog is due to retire, just say in 2009.
Oh.
So we'll have another dog ready for them to train with, and we'll work with them as well on where the dog will retire to. So it is quite hard at the same
time
that, you know, to give a dog up that you might have had for 8 or 9 years, but that is life, you know, that's part of life as well, and then you move on to your new dog as well. With our assistance dog program, we'll do something the same as well. Now, we're hoping when the child is maybe the 16, 17, 18 age, they won't need that support. We'll see what happens then as well, that the usefulness of the dog maybe to help with the communication and so even the social skills as well, that the parents might not have been able to bring the child out into a coffee shop or pet expo or wherever, but with the dog, because the dog is connected to the child and it has that calming influence on them, that they would be able to bring them out. So that social skills
often people talk to the dogs first, isn't it?
You know. And then if whoever's having a tantrum, well, they know then that there is, that child may have autism or whatever because they have the dog attacked, and they will make an excuse for it then as well.
If people want to contact you, how can they do this?
The best way is through our centre in Cork. The free phone numbers are on there. The low-call numbers are on there as well, either to talk to our fundraising staff, our assistance dog or guide dog training staff. We're fairly well manned down there.
Thank you so much. Thanks, that was brilliant. Have you got a minute for me? Malamutes are one of those breeds that people do not quite understand.
No.
You know, they say, like, you know, Malamutes, they shouldn't be here, and look at the coat of them, you know. I mean, not that we have summer anywhere, but can you just tell me a bit about, you know, Malamutes per se?
Well, they're an Arctic dog, they're a snow dog, they're extremely sociable, they love to be around people, they are a fantastic family pet, do you know what I mean? And you can see here today, they're mixing with everybody, you know, and they're extremely strong, and they're extremely strong-willed. They will do what they want, when they want.
That's exactly one of the things, you know, that... That, I think, probably makes it a bit more difficult when you sort of want to rehome them or want to home them to people. People have to have probably some experience with it. Well, what is your ideas about that?
I wouldn't recommend them to somebody that has not ever had a dog before. Yeah, okay. And for a person that wants a dog that has a bit of personality, I think this is the dog for you. You know, a dog that can give as good as it gets. This is the dog for you.
The good thing about them is, I suppose, even though they're quite big, you know, when you work, I work a lot with German Shepherds, and they have, you know, sort of this inbred problem of hip dysplasia. It usually does not apply to them that much. They do, you know, not really get that ill, do they?
Malamutes have the same problems with hip dysplasia. Therefore,
to the same extent?
Yeah. So when they're puppies, you know yourself, you don't walk them the good year, you don't bring them on the long walks, up the stairs, all of this, you know. So I think any large breed dogs do have that problem, you know.
But I mean, with the German Shepherd, it's apparently inbred, you know.
They
sort of bred them in a hurry when they brought them back, you know.
The purest breed dogs. Yeah. Malamutes are completely untouched from the purest breed dogs. And when I say purebred, it would be the nearest thing to the wolf. As in extremely wolf-like instincts. Yes. Yeah. And the whole wolf attitude, like, sit? Why? Why should I sit? Yeah. You know, they're extremely like that.
Okay. So what are your tips then for training them, if you want them to sit?
Make them respect you. Don't punish them.
Yeah. Well,
make them make them respect you. All they want is affection. You know, when they do wrong, you tell them. When they do good, make sure you tell them that they do good.
Praise is always better than punishment.
Praise is always better. And spend time with them. You know, when you're sitting in the sitting room watching telly, don't stick them out the back garden. They lie on the rug and they watch telly.
Exactly.
You know? And
even Emmerdale.
Yes, even Emmerdale and EastEnders.
So you have a club where people can get some information about them. Can you just tell us how people can get in contact with you guys?
Yeah, it's www.alaskanmalamute.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks. How are you guys? My name is Thomas. I have a radio show called Wild Time. You're from the Labrador Retriever Club. It's a much-loved dog, yet, rightly so, yet in recent statistics... that I read in the UK, they have been described as being short-tempered. I have not experienced that. I'm just saying you what I read.
Well, I have been involved in Labradors for nearly 40 years, and we've never, ever owned one bad-tempered one.
So I don't know where they got that from. I was a bit surprised myself because they're good family dogs.
Probably very bad breeding, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Bad breeding. Yeah. I mean, here's two, mother and daughter, and they've been mauled, basically, this morning. No problems.
So when we talk about the breeding, you know, apparently a lot of people say like, you know, don't go to puppy mills, you know. So what's the best way to get a good dog? I mean, because apparently it's also difficult to find good breeders that have knowledge.
I'm secretary of the Labrador Retriever Club of Ireland. Okay. So people ring the kennel club and they get my name, and we have a list of puppies available through the club. Mm-hmm. So we can almost guarantee a puppy. Not guarantee it, almost.
Yeah.
There is a lot of bad breeding going on, and unfortunately there are no legal rules in Ireland from the government.
So it has to be controlled.
It has to be controlled by clubs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is that difficult? I mean, these days, you know, we have loads of shelters, so we have loads of unwanted animals. So
lots of bad puppy farmers, unfortunately.
And, so you battle with that in a way, isn't it?
We do. And we do tell people that, you know, I mean, this is a very good chocolate. You will get very bad chocolates from puppy farmers because they're breeding them very badly. They should never be mated to yellows.
Okay.
And they are doing that in order to make money.
Yeah.
But a good, it's like a human. A human with a good background will be hopefully a very nice person.
Yeah, yeah.
The same applies to a dog.
Even though there's still this thing that is called education.
Exactly. Well, again, they're educated, the dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they don't become as placid as that by themselves, absolutely. You know.
So there's lots of responsibility then. I mean,
when it all boils down, they're animals.
Yeah.
But they still have a very placid, nice nature. Signs on, they're guide dogs for the blind, they're drugs dogs, they're multi-purpose dogs, basically. Top gun dog in the world.
I mean, you're doing this for over 40, I mean, you don't look older than 42 anyway, but you're doing this for 40 years, right? If you couldn't have a Labrador...
For nothing,
yeah, as we all do. What other breed do you really like?
Well, my family always had Irish Setters.
Oh, okay.
And my husband's family had Boxers.
Right,
so I think if I were, I would always stick with a retriever, but it would be probably an Irish Setter.
Okay.
And I grew up, when I was born, we had a rough collie, and he died when I was about 12.
Mm.
And I've never had another one.
Oh, okay.
But a Labrador would be, or an Irish Setter.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Thanks. You're listening to Wild Time only here on IndieMedia.ie with myself, Thomas Janak. I was just talking to the Labrador Kennel Club, and I was also talking to a lady before that about the Malamutes. Apparently, you know, you have the Irish Gun Dogs here, you have Cavaliers here, and the Irish Dachshund Club and whatever you have. And yes, they're all lovely breeds, but the stories very likely will be the same. So I will not go to... each and every stall that we have here. A lot of people now own reptiles, but there's not that many, that much known about them. A lot of people that I had a guy that breeds them, and he says the amount of animals that come back because people just don't know how to feed them, what not to feed them.
That's why we're here.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I wanted to talk to you about it. You know, if you have,
I just supplied all the animals here today. So,
are you breeding them? Are you the one that, or you just?
I breed them for my own personal.
So you would know about what to look out for.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone has never ever had a reptile. What's a safe way to start when you said, look, I would probably like to breed them or just spend time?
When you go to a pet shop, you want to be very careful. You want to make sure that, a few of the shops have sold Burmese pythons, you know, as babies to a child, and you don't realise how big they're going to grow, so eventually they get too big. They either release it into the wild or they give it back to the pet shop, but 9 times out of 10, they just release it or just get rid of it somehow, you know, kill it even.
Yeah.
So just... start off small, do your research first and make sure everything's...
Is it difficult to do your research? Some people do the internet thing. Do you have sort of booklets that you...
Yeah, there's books in every pet shop with reptiles.
Yeah.
And the internet is very, very good. There's reptile community on the website. You can buy and sell. And then there's a chat then as well if you wanted to talk to people that keep these animals and ask them what the best way to do is. And that's what we do now.
You have this one really, really big yoke here. We're actually taking a picture of it.
So
what's his name? Harry?
Harry, yeah.
What exactly is he?
He's a Burmese python.
And so, you know, to me, that's just a term. It just sounds like something out of an Indian movie or something, you know. Is he difficult to care for?
No. You just have him in a big tank, water, make sure you have the temperature right. Other than that, just feed him every 5 to 6 days.
What does he eat? I mean, every 5 to 6 days.
Well, he's 14 foot now, so he's eating rabbits. But when I first got him now, he was only eating small mice.
Okay. And would he be one of those guys that prefer them live and...
No, it's illegal to feed them live. And if you feed them live, they end up turning aggressive and you can't handle them as freely anymore. So
okay. I went to Africa 2 years ago and they apparently, you know, put live mice in. And they told me it stimulates them better. That's why I'm asking.
No. There's no difference in feeding live and dead. If you feed them live, you can end up damaging the snake and then the rat will bite back and it will damage your snake. So you just have the expensive vet bills for reptiles as well.
Yeah. Speaking of prices, if I would say, I would be an expert or something, I want to buy him, you know, how much is that?
For a baby albino Burmese python, you're talking about €300 to €400.
Okay, and then he grows to this size. So
he's still only a baby now. He'll reach 17 foot.
Oh, okay. So that's the thing, when people...
There are snakes out there now that will reach... You know, 28 foot, without breaking.
Because that's the problem that I sometimes have with people that keep them in apartments.
You know, how do you do that? Well, there's no problems in keeping them in apartments. You think about it, that tank there is a 4 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot. That's fitting him quite comfortably now at the moment.
He can move around.
If you snakes don't really move around that much, but take them out, they'd be grand. Plenty of space to move around in. A lifetime tank for him now would be 6 foot. 6 foot by 3 foot by 2 foot, and they'd be quite comfy on that, you know.
Okay. So it is about knowing how much space they really do need.
You need to do your research anyway, because if you buy a small Burmese python, a baby one, you couldn't put it into a tank that big. It'd want to be in a very, very small tank, like the 3 foot one down there, otherwise they won't feed.
All right, so you have to give
to upgrade the tank every time, you know.
So that's important or interesting as well, because, you know, there's money involved then.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't just say, I just buy the big one now.
Yeah, no, you can't just buy the big one and expect it to live on that. Like, it won't feed for you, it just won't work out. You need to start off with a small tank, small snake enclosure, and then work your way up then. Don't do it, like, if you haven't got the money, like. I'm Gerard McClelland, and it's the Herpetological Society of Ireland.
And how can people contact you if they wanted to?
The website is here. What's it called?
www.thehsi.ie.
You are listening to Wild Time, only here on IndieMedia.ie with myself, Thomas Jan. I'm coming to you today from the Pet Expo at the RDS in Dublin.
The vultures grow heavier, so the vultures we have in our sanctuary are Himalayan vultures, and they have up to 14 kilos weight. Can take a picture like that, huh?
Regular listeners actually recognize this voice. This is Lothar Muschgetard from the Irish Raptor Research Center, Eagles Flying. He's the gentleman that actually is taking Hogan, the bird that we rescued from the pet shop, out of our hands, and he is allowed to live in his sanctuary. Happily ever after, so to speak. And I hope we get a little chance to talk to Lothar. Lothar, so you got a minute for me now to do a little interview. I was just saying that you have been on the show for a full hour. So we spread the word about Hogan, the bird that we rescued. And everybody says, like, oh, is it a good place? How is he living? Will he be on display? So can you tell the people what's in store for Hogan?
That depends totally on the bird. The birds tell us what they want, what they tolerate, and we react according to that. If that bird is, let's say, not willing to see people, he will stay backstage. Not all our animals and birds are on display. We have more than 350 birds and animals in the sanctuary, and only maybe 30 or 40 of them are on display.
Will he meet other parrots?
He definitely will. We get many parrots, for example, from different SPCA units, confiscated birds, self-mutilating parrots, self-plucking parrots, and we do some therapy on these birds and hope to get them back on the right road.
Brilliant. So, yeah. Well, I'm already a bit bonded, but I'm still looking forward to it because I know he has a good life there, you know?
Most definitely, Thomas, and you know you can visit your girlfriend whenever you want.
Okay, thank you so much. So, you know, for some of you who haven't heard the story, the bird that I'm looking after is called Hogan. He's an Amazon parrot. I met him in a pet shop, and I won't mention which one because it's really not their fault. We met him in a pet shop, and some youngsters came in and cut off its beak. And the beak got patched back on again, and he started then biting and screaming and stuff. So I work on his trauma. And we really bonded, so we fundraised some money and paid some of our own money to get him out of there. So he's in our home now. Good Hogan, and Lothar was on my show in March, and he said, look, you know, if you ever manage to get the bird, I put him into my aviary where he can actually live his life with other parrots, which is brilliant. I mean, he can live up to 50 years, even longer, sometimes 60 years. So I think, you know, that's a much better option, but it is quite difficult for me personally because I'm quite bonded with this gentleman. So anyway, we will keep you posted and updated on the story. You are listening to Wild Time only here on IndieMedia.ie with myself, Thomas Jana, coming to you today from the Pet Expo in Dublin in October 2009. And that's all we have time for. Please listen back again to us. Check out the blog www.wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. That's www.wildtimeonline.blogspot.com. You can become a fan and a friend of ours on Facebook, www.facebook.com/wildtimeradio. That's all we have time for. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.